Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things, the show where we talk about after. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert, ActionNewsGame.com, Young.
Ah, yes, ActionNewsGame.com. Go ahead and check it out.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Dude, I am so excited about today's subject because I saw the chatter all around me and didn't really know. Like, it was clear to me something was going on, but I wasn't dialed into it, so I'm excited for you to tell me about it.
Yeah, well, you know, the Story Voice beta has been going really well. If you go to storyvoiceapp.com, you can sign up. I'll put you on my beta list. I've got 100 users right now. I'm looking for more people to test. This is my new app that does automatically adds punctuation, makes it very easy when you want to do when you want to have like dialogue. And I got to find out what browser you're using to find out why that happened.
It does appear on our screen to say Story Voic. New line E.
So now Story Voice is an app that I made. It makes it easy if you want to write without having to add your punctuation. It tries to intelligently figure out where things go. It's based on the idea, hold down the button, say a sentence, let go of the button. It figures it out if that's a question or a statement or was it dialogue. And then you build your paragraph, gets added in the main screen, and it handles it appropriately. So I'm looking for more people who want to beta use it, and it's for iOS only right now. I'd like to do an Android version, but I got to start somewhere. And so if you're curious to try it and want to give me some feedback, please do. It's been going great so far. It's been very, very helpful because you have a thing you make because like, this is how I would do it. This is what I would do. But I get people going, well, I meant to do this because a lot of it's voice driven too. Like you can mark the last paragraph and it'll put asterisks about it. You can do a lot of like just a lot of things you just do with your voice through it. So you don't have to touch anything other than the button. But it's helpful for me to have people tell me, could do this. Accessibility. I have a friend who is legally blind, and so I spent last Friday working with her and the app looking at how can I make this better for people who are vision impaired. And so, and I had one of the feedback, somebody says, hey, I use accessibility. iOS is great about accessibility for people who have impairments, and I've been working through the app trying to make it, you know, labeling everything right so it'll work there. So anyhow, that is storyvoiceapp.com. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
I was about to say, didn't something else happen this past week? Maybe we have crossed wires here.
So, remember when you're a kid and you watch Star Wars and you're like, this is awesome and I would like to live in Star Wars? I mean, I understand that it's a galaxy being torn apart by war and, you know, there's an evil empire, but man, this is fun. I wish I could live Star Wars like all the time or a lot of times. Would it be cool if, like, you know, Disneyland did Star Wars Land, and then your friend's like, no, it's a dead franchise. You're dumb. It's never going to happen, you know, and just give it up. Give it up. And then you're like, no, I will keep the dream alive. Look, they're making prequels. They're going to be great. They're going to be so – anyhow, point
is, I think this is a very general feeling all of us have had. Yeah. Not a specific one just to you.
Yeah, like, hey, where's my Han Solo action figure? You're supposed to give that back. I'm like, listen, I had bottle rocket engines. I had to do some experiments, okay? I'm sorry that he melted, you know? Anyhow, my point is,
D23, it's a conference from Disney, yes. Right?
So what happened is, you know, as we all know, Disney, newsflash, Disney bought Star Wars. And I think we actually talked about that on, you know, probably on Weird Things when that first happened. And we watched sort of the evolution of this, what's been going on with Disney. And we were all at Star Wars Celebration together when they did the trailer for Force Awakens. And Disney announced that, yeah, we're going to be doing things. We're going to be expanding it. We're going to be doing attractions. We're going to be doing this in the parks. And we've seen that already with, like, they've done, you know, if you go to Tomorrowland, like Hyperspace Mountain, Space Mountain's now Hyperspace Mountain. They have stormtroopers walking around. They're doing more Star Wars attractions. And then you can see the construction for what was being called Star Wars Land, but is now Galaxy's Edge. And they're building a park in Disneyland and in the park in Disney World in Florida. And this is an incredibly huge immersive project. And when Universal Studios did Harry Potter, it set a whole new bar for theme parks. Harry Potter took a very, very rich – they took a very rich franchise with a lot of details, very cinematic, very visual – and they created an incredible experience they keep adding on to. And, you know, Disney was put on notice. Like, you guys, this is the future of theme parks. You need to see what you can do. And the result is, in one of the many revelations, is they showed more details of what Star Wars Land looks like. And it's incredible. It's you know, Cars Land was sort of an inspiration. That's where they started from. If you ever go to Cars Land, what's great about Cars Land, you feel like you're in the world of cars. You step on that street, you see mountains in the background, you know, that shape like the cars type, you know, tail ends the cars, et cetera, tail fins. And it was a beautiful immersive experience. And they said, let's take what we learned from there. And they literally, I guess they started with the same like 3D file that Cars Land was based upon. And they started expanding that into what's now become Galaxy's Edge. And it's built upon the idea that it's not just you go on rides, there's immersive entertainment. So a character may come up to you and ask you if you want to buy passage somewhere or something like that. And then later on, that storyline might continue on with you and your friends as you get onto a ride or an attraction. So it's not just you just go here and do this. Everybody in that part of the park is going to be in costume, going to be in character. The goal is they want you to feel like you've really gone to this alien trading port on the edge of the galaxy.
This is amazing because it sounds like in all of the Disney properties, there is one idea that was the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced. It's the most precious idea, and it died. And it's not like Disney to kill off things that are truly wonderful like this. But you guys had been to the Adventurers Club, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You never made it to the Adventurers Club while it was around. Okay. It sounds to me, everything that I just heard from Andrew makes me think that they're taking the lessons, the best parts of the Adventurers Club experience, and applying it to this Star Wars world. Because the Adventurers Club, the moment you walked in, it was suddenly 1926. You were there at an Adventurers Club where people would regale you with, actual human beings would regale you with tales of the time they encountered a lion or a saber-toothed tiger or whatever. You would get updates on the radio of adventurers, reporting in from the fronts and so on. It was
based on the Explorers Club in New York, like that kind of experience.
Exactly, right? But it was truly magical, and I can't if Star Wars is a pale sliver of what the Adventurers Club was, then I take all of my money and all of my vacation time. I'll live there forever, right?
Well, I think the lessons are from Harry Potter world and the idea with Harry Potter, which might be just the all time best or most compatible world to make into a theme park as part of the idea of that world is that there is this wizarding world that's right next to this other human world. So you are able to sort of build that transformation into some of the experience. Is to just like now the reason why you want to go in a world where Six Flags is everywhere. Like now it's not about building the biggest coaster, right? Mm. In fact, I think it's almost telling that in that D23 stuff, I'm sure they might have announced it, but I haven't heard what the big ride is going to be, right?
Well, yeah, they talk about that. Remember, that's different between amusement parks and theme parks, though. The big surprise announcement was. And Brian, did you hear about this?
No, I've heard almost nothing.
Star Wars Hotel.
Oh, I heard that I heard something about a hotel where each guest is given a personalized experience. And it was a little bit loose as far as what that meant.
So what it is they're going to build, it's going to be like you're on board a spaceship. You look out their viewports, their windows, you see stars, you see space, and you're in Star Wars. They talk about every minute of the experience will be a Star Wars experience, okay? You get your own storyline, your adventure. Now, they do this to some degree. Like, if you go to Disney resorts now, like, you can have this daily adventures where you can pay for this extra package where you can go into the park and have special missions and special things they do. And so they've got Disney tries to come across as sort of like, hey, everybody gets the same thing, but there are definitely different tiers of experience. If you go to the park, that's one thing. If you stay at one of the resorts, then you get, cool things that happen there. You get, different experiences there. And then if you want to go do something special packages, if you go to the cruise ships, see, the cruise ships are amazing. They've got like on One cruise ship, they've got the Avengers Academy, where kids get to learn. They go all day, you know, on the cruise ship. They go into this, looks like the Avengers headquarters, and they do all these different, you know, Avengers and Marvel superhero-related tasks. They've got another one that's a Star Wars-themed one at the Millennium Falcon, and kids get a pilot. This is on the ship, and it's amazing. And so now they're looking at building this big, huge, you know, think of it as another resort, essentially. Another resort within the resort where you can go in there and have a completely immersive Star Wars adventure.
And technologically, there's a number of things they can do now that they were never able to do before. Nowadays, when it comes to paying for stuff, when you get a hotel room, you get an RFID. And all this is going to sound like an ad for the Walt Disney World experience, partly because I think all of us are really excited about this. But they've got RFID wristbands that you can use to pay for everything. But also, because there's unique identifiers on it, that means that the moment you get on the elevator, it's able to assess, okay, everybody in this elevator is on the Jabba assassination adventure. And so during that latent bandwidth of the six stories that you're going up.
I like how Brian went so dark.
Yeah, but I mean, then all of a sudden up pops, you know, I don't know, the ghost of Raul Julia, who's like, we have to assassinate Jabba the Hutt. And then, and it's like, oh, family, let's go assassinate Jabba the Hutt. But it's like, on the one hand, that seems like stapling on a bunch of extra silliness. But on the other hand, it's taking latent moments that are unused bandwidth and allow them to turn into a journey of the imagination that I think will make the entire theme park
which
experience
was a great
even
ride,
better.
By the way, too.
What's that?
Yeah.
Journey of the Imagination.
So I guess here was my point before is that, like, even Harry Potter World has signature, like, rides that they made a big stink about, right? It was Escape from Gringotts, and it was the Hogwarts thing. What I see with this is that not only – I don't think that they're downplaying the rides in any way or they're not going to make great rides, but rather that the big selling point is something that Disney can do better than anybody else on a scale which I think anybody else would struggle to kind of copy, and that is immersive theater. And if you look at what's been done in that space from Sleep No More in New York, we have one called the Speakeasy out here in San Francisco. This is a further along kind of art form that I could see very easily with Disney Imagineering putting their elbow grease behind it, really scaling up and doing something that is awesome. Because the beautiful thing about immersive theater is that, Brian, what you're thinking is a lot more of an on-rails experience where this thing just juts out at you, right?
Right.
What a lot of immersive theater is now, or what it is kind of developed to be, is if you just want, like, for example, the Speakeasy in San Francisco, if you just want to sit at the bar and drink at this Speakeasy, you can. And there'll be colorful characters that come in and out, and sometimes they'll get in arguments, and sometimes they'll yell at each other, and sometimes they'll talk about the world. But by and large, you just hang out and you talk to your friends and you're at a cool place. If you want, you can follow the people that you find the most interesting. And so now you are in a situation where in the open, you are just following these people and you're following these threads. And now if you imagine that over a week's time or something like that, where everything kind of revolves in a 24-hour period, and now the idea is like, okay, I'm not looking for everything to be perfect. I'm looking for the next thread that I didn't see.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the guy that got into a fight with his bounty hunter friend and then stormed off. I want to make sure I follow him to find out where he goes. And maybe some of that goes out into the park, and maybe some of it stays in here, and maybe a lot of it is hands off. But if it gets into a controlled environment where they can make sure that everybody's there under their own volition, they can interact more directly with people. I think there's an amazing possibility for this.
Yeah, you could tell when you went to the Adventurers Club that everyone, and what was really fascinating was watching the different actors swap jobs. You would see somebody one week as so-and-so character, and now they're playing the different character. But it was clear that they knew all the characters' backstories, and you could. It was totally fine to have a discussion and start doing a back and forth. And very quickly, they would assess, like, oh, are you making a casual joke, or are you really wanting to explore my adventures and so on, and they would tell you a story one on one, and it was astonishing. The closest thing that I could think of that exists to it now. I mean, of course, the stuff at Universal and the Harry Potter world has done very, very well in that regard. But the, you know, Epcot, with you walk around Epcot, and it's not until your fourth or fifth time going around Epcot, drinking around the world, that you realize how many layers they've built in to keep that lap around the world interesting for people who have already ridden, you know, the General Motors Fast Track or whatever.
There is so much, you know, as in when, if you're like, you're a pass holder, you know, at either the parks, or I've been both Disneyland and Disney World, you spend at least, sometimes you go there and you never do a ride and you try to look at all that other entertainment. By the way, they're adding Ratatouille to France in Epcot.
Oh, that's
adding,
great.
And they're also adding a Guardians of the Galaxy ride there too, a new one. So a lot of ride stuff there. I think what's part of the problem is, like, I don't go as much as I used to Disneyland, because now that they have the pass holder thing, it's, everybody has one, it's too crowded. It is, like, extremely, it's too crowded for me. And, like, I will go if I have a friend who works in the park, or if I can get, you know, a special access kind of thing, which is cool. But other than that, it's too crowded for me. And Disney knows it's a crowded thing, and they understand, well, we're making money, but they also know we want to make sure that we have maintained a quality of experience. And that's why, like, Justin, to your point, they're looking for these other things they can do that aren't just attraction based, that they can be other forms of entertainment that go on there.
Because Disney can do service, and Disney can do what Disney has that I think anybody else would, again, very, very, they would struggle mightily to replicate, is decades and decades of, A, people wanting to come into work for Disney because they know it is of X quality, and B, the idea that, like, as much as you can, you know, when you're local, you can kind of snicker at the, oh, they're cast members, like, whatever. Dude, you sell popcorn. Like, you know, it's fine. You're a cast member. But that's real. And if they want to dial that up and they want to spend a little bit extra and they want to really make that a bigger thing, it's something that I think they can pull off more than anybody else. The question to me is going to be, where does that scale for the world, right? How much is it going to be worth for a German tourist, same as with a family of four, same as, you know, somebody else here in America? And I wonder how much of that will translate. But if anybody can bring it to a mass market, it's Disney, in my opinion.
The thing that I'm fascinated by is that, so I went with Riley Blanton on Friday.
By the way, for those who don't know, Riley Blanton does an amazing show, The Star Wars Report. It's our number one pick for Star Wars news. It's really good.
Yeah, fantastic report. So I went there. We went to the it's a pop up bar in the middle of Hollywood called Scum and Villainy, right? And it's not official Star Wars, but it's a very, you know, Star Wars inspired sort of bar, and you pay for a ticket, like, to go in there for 2 hours and you get a couple drinks with it, et cetera. And it was, you know, it's a very cool kind of thing. This is a fan thing. You know, it's not, it's just this thing. And it started in May. It was only going to run for a little while, but it keeps going. And I'm going to show you a photo of the front line. This was on a Friday night. This is a rando Friday night in July. And
Jesus.
Holy cow. Yeah.
And they're dressed up in Star Wars. And it's like, you go in there and, like, you know, all ages. So, like, I sat at a counter, and then over at the table over to my right were, you know, a bunch of, you know, as a family, their kids, the little girl was dressed as Rey. The little boy was dressed as Luke. The father and the mother were dressed, you know, as Jedi. And it was like an adorable thing. But this is, you know, this is the kind of thing they have for just this, this is a fan version of this experience there. Look at what's going on with the explosion of escape rooms. People want to get out and want to have experiences. We want theme parks. We want different things. I think the escape room idea, the idea of, let's take existing structures and existing places and let's change this into something. Let's make a themed entertainment thing. I think that's going to grow and get more complex. I think we're starting to see some chains, some companies that run multiple escape rooms. And I think that if some of them kind of crack the, you know, figure out the logistics of keeping those things active and people going through there, which there are ways to do that, I think we're going to see themed attraction entertainment companies start to get bigger. I could even see Disney maybe looking to get into that business.
Oh, which, by the way, I to take this more into a weird things context, I'm pretty sure, and I think I've said this on the show, but I'm pretty sure that as robots do all of the everythings we don't want to do, we enter a phase of humanity where the only job is artist. And you know, it's like your job is to, oh, I work at a theme and I give the service of acting and selling a story so that somebody has an enhanced fantasy experience when they're solving a puzzle involving cryptography or whatever.
Certainly, it's the one sector of the economy that continues to grow. And it's a, we'll watch, you know, you watch, let's say, you know, overall movie attendance decline, but at the same time, you look at the number of people, the size of the video game industry increase, and the size of, you know, other kinds of entertainment. And I think as when it comes to live entertainment, I think there's going to be a big future in escape room stuff. I think that, and we're going to expand, and it's not just escape rooms. It's the idea of like, oh, we went there and we saw this great 45-minute magic show. You know, we went there and we saw this thing, we saw that thing. And I think 100%. These things are just going to increase.
You know, and that's, I've known a few people that work at that speakeasy in San Francisco, and what they're finding out is that part of their future is lying not only in the 70-30 split of 70% play, 30% party, but also now they're doing other nights of like where it's just 70% party, 30% play. And like there's not really a major story, but you got some colorful characters that are singing and dancing. And so it's just kind of a wild night as opposed to all the crazy crap that normally goes on. But I totally agree with you, Andrew. I think that there is something to we want the thing that we can't do anywhere else. And the internet, everybody kind of assumes as the internet made it more feasible for us to connect with people that we have more in common with, that what we wanted to do was stay more inside. And now I think what we're realizing is like, no, well, like if I'm inside and I'm connecting with everybody that I love and everybody I love loves escape rooms, right? Or speakeasy bars, not speakeasy, the thing, but like bars around the country where you have to know a secret code to get in, then guess what I want to do? I want to go all around the country and I want to visit all of them. I want to go and meet with other people that are like it. And specifically, I want to go to Star Wars Land with everybody I know that loves Star Wars so we can go and explore all the Star Wars. Like it just is to me the future of things.
Yeah, I think. And I'm excited by the idea, though, of that. In one hand, we have Disney building billion-dollar attractions with billion-dollar franchises. On the other hand, I know people who are like, oh, yeah, they're going to put together, they're going to go do a, you know, some clever people I know, they're going to go do an escape room. I'm like, and that's really cool because you can compete. You can compete in this age because the wonderful thing the internet's done is if we tried to build an escape room in 1992, we would have to hope for some crazy good local publicity, newspaper, radio, whatever, and we'd be behest at that. Now, if we wanted to open up an escape room, is I would buy a Facebook ad for everybody in, you know, several zip codes who likes escape rooms, and I would post that on their feed because I know I can make everybody there know, and I know for the less than it would cost me to buy a radio ad.
You know what? Here's the weird part. If you are listening and you are under the age of 20 and you are trying to figure out what sector, not what you want to do for a living, but what sector of business you want to develop into, obviously I'm biased. I'm somebody who chose, all three of us are people who chose, you know, the arts as a category, before now. But I think that's a really safe bet, is developing a skill set that lets you work in the arts. That sector is just going to keep growing and blowing up, right?
Well, part of also the fact is there is kind of a decline in retail space compared to what there was 10 years ago. There's more available and you can do a little bit, you can be a little bit more flexible with it. But that's a lot of where escape rooms have kind of popped up, or a lot of these pop-up bars is like, you know, let's just operate it for as long as it's profitable, right? Escape rooms obviously require a lot more installation, but there's a very, very interesting time that we are in where there's space that needs filling and you can do it cheaper than you used to.
And I think that as we get more knowledge about how to do it and how to, you know, you get creative people, but that's some of the problems. I talk to people who do these things, like they don't, like, how do I keep people coming in here? And I'm like, some attractions I've been to, it's like, well, here's the problem, is you're not going to get any repeats because you're not investing in redoing your storylines. And it doesn't mean you have to redo everything, but if it's going to be the same experience as last time, I'm not eager to do it. But if it's going to be different every couple months, you get repeat. So there's a lot of, it's exciting.
And of course, these are old problems to anybody who has performed on stage, whether it's as a band, whether it's, you know, with a live improvisational story or whatever. The idea is, how do you keep, I'm going to use the word fleece, although it has a negative connotation. How do you keep getting your return customers coming back so that you can make it a satisfying, entertaining experience for them?
Yeah, I think that, and that comes down to, as we get, when it comes, like, escape rooms are kind of cool because it's like, they're not like labor intensive. You kind of like go in there, but some of them are getting more like interactive actors, and there's an economics that apply there. And there's like, what does it take to create a new one or to launch a new one? And it's, if you create company, if you have companies that own several of them, they can rotate them around the country. You know, you can move these sort of attractions from one spot to the next, like you do theater, like small theater, like regional theater. Think about it that way. And that becomes, I think we'll see kind of a market and a thing for like, oh yeah, you know, they're getting, you know, they do it like, we're very close to, and this will happen. Sometimes they'll do this for like in LA to like, for movies will come out, they'll do really cool specialty attractions, but they're only in LA because they're just done to generate, you know, and, you know,
industry
hype. And I've got friends who do that kind of thing. Like, you know, they did the whole thing for like the Dark Knight thing, that whole interactive experience stuff. So I think we're getting very close to, and like, they'll pay like, oh, we'll do an Oculus Rift, you know, environment game or whatever that'll be at Comic-Con. But I think we're very close to somebody saying, hey, like, you know, we could do a Blade Runner escape room, and we could put it in LA and New York, Miami, or a few other cities. And, you know, it might even make money, and it might even become a thing where if you're a studio, you go, maybe this is a thing we do too. It's another way to capitalize on this. You'd go to a company that's good at producing these things, because, man, if there was like an official Blade Runner like escape room, oh man, I'd be all over that. You know,
that's interesting.
Well, or you know, when you told me that you and Riley were going to this pop up bar, initially I thought it was like tied to D23 or something like that, and I was like, oh man, like, let me know if there's any merch, like if there's any like sweet. And I'm not a huge merch guy in general, but like, I know at pop-up shops, they have cool merch. That's like half the cool, like, thing about those. They have limited edition rad stuff. And so, like, I would love it. But, like, I think that there's a tremendous, I think you're right, Andrew. If you just looked at things from a, let's make an experience. Mm-hmm. If people are excited about this thing, let's just try to do something that is just a fun night out that gets buzz. Because I think you're right, Andrew. I think it could make money. You don't even have to look at it as promo.
Yeah, I think that would be, I mean, the business opportunity, if somebody wants to say, hey, let's figure out how to, it's not just designing a cool experience, it's figuring out the economic model. It's going to the studio and saying, okay, you have the rights, you can do this thing. This is what we can do. We can create this experience. This is the budget, the cost. This is our projections to do this. We can just launch it here in prior, you know, 2 months prior to the movie coming out, and you can build up, you know, a potential. There's a model to be built there, and there's a way that will make it work, and there's ways that people will probably try it and it'll fail, because it's, those things are hard to run because, you know, you got labor costs, you got other things. But I think that could be just another thing that becomes the rotating live attraction.
And listen, we've already seen it. You know, pop-up shops have become a really, really big business in music, and they're only getting more elaborate and intensive. So,
any picks, gentlemen?
Mine is Station Breaker, which I'm continuing to enjoy working my way through. Normally, I just devour audiobooks, but every so often I have so much fun that I want to space them out. So I pause to listen to some podcasts, but I'm excited to get back to that.
My pick.
I hope
is,
you make it through, man.
Oh no, you are okay. Don't even. you know, I'm all the way hooked into this. This is gonna be great.
My pick is Preacher. Watch the 2 episodes of Preacher. I think it's my favorite show, and it might be my favorite show ever. I love it. It's funny. There was USA has got this new show called Blood Drive. That's like a very grindhousey kind of thing, and. Like, I watched the first episode just as I was doing other stuff because it came on after wrestling. And I was like, oh, that's cool. A grindhouse TV show. That's an interesting idea. And then, like, Preacher came on. And it's like going from, you know, a ground chuck to filet mignon. And you're like, yes, no, this is what a TV show is. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, Preacher is pretty great.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. Can't wait to start watching it. My pick is slashfilm.com. Our friend Pete Shiretta's movie blog. He's got some great coverage. He's a super hardcore Star Wars fan and Disney fan. And so he was at D23, and Peter did a really, really good breakdown of all the things there. So I would say go to slashfilm.com and check out their coverage of that.
Yeah, Pete's good people.
Yeah, Pete's a good guy. Gentlemen.
Yep.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.